This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Cincinnati Zoo is holding an event November 12th that explores the diversity and beauty of plants native to our region. The zoo's fifth annual Native Plant Symposium will also feature presentations by industry experts on topics including gardens to attract pollinators, rare plants of Ohio, and designing pocket prairies. Here to give us a preview of the Native Plants Symposium are Mike Berkeley, co-owner of Grow Wild Nursery in Fairview, Tennessee, and co-host of the Native Plant Podcast, and Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and Taking Root chairman Scott Berline. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Mike and Scott, good afternoon to both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon to you.
So, Scott, fifth year for the Native Plant Symposium. How did this get its start in the first place?
Well, about 5 years ago, we had our first symposium, which is actually a sustainable urban landscape symposium. And it was a good success, and we started thinking about what else can we do. So we had also a plant trials day, which is a summer symposium for more general horticulture. But, you know, the idea of doing something for native plants just was a bug that kept growing. It's such an important, probably the most exciting element of horticulture right now, this discovery or rediscovery in some cases of this great subgroup of plants that can do so much for our landscapes. Way underutilized and really exciting.
Mike, why native plants? I mean, a lot of garden plants originated in other parts of the world, so why plant a native species instead of one of these?
That's a very good question. But, you know, if you just take the gardener, and the gardener is always looking for something new and exciting. And I think it's so ironic, first off, that we're talking about species of plants that have been on this continent around us for a lot longer than we've been on this continent. And then durability, I mean, that's the big one. And that's true. If a plant has been here, and has evolved into some durability for hundreds of years, thousands of years, then, you know, you do have the durability. They're more suited for our sites, whether it's in Cincinnati and, there in Ohio or down here in Middle Tennessee. And so the indigenous species are, you know, they're going to be better suited for that particular site. I think probably the biggest thing that's happened with the native plants to get those really in the forefront in horticulture has been it's been a bug, and it's been the butterfly, and it's been the pollinators. And I think that, you know, there's a genuine concern out there right now about just a monarch butterfly, you know, and I think that one bug, that one insect has turned gardeners around big time. And it's like, okay, fine, we need more milkweeds because we're not seeing as many monarch butterflies. Okay. And, we're going to put our milkweeds out there that is the host plant for the caterpillars of the monarch, but you also got to put your other nectar providing plants, other food plants out there, and to provide the nectar for the adult butterfly. Well, then there comes Joe Pye weed, coneflowers, things like that. So it has snowballed, and I think also there's an ethical in everybody's mind now is that, okay, I can protect these plants, I can take care of these plants. My backyard is my land holding, and I am a steward of this land. I'm going to put the plants, and it's been really funny here lately. We do have here at Grow Wild, we have a special permit we use in the state of Tennessee to grow and sell endangered species, federal listed and state listed endangered species. And a lot of the gardeners here will buy those plants because they feel like they can protect them just as good as any government agency. And they do. They'll pay $5 for one small little plant, and that's a federal endangered species. Take it home, nurture it and everything. And ironically also, they're beautiful, tough as nails and beautiful just because they're endangered. Doesn't mean otherwise. But there's several reasons for that, I guess. I think the habitat has been a big deal. It's one of the reasons I'm talking about pocket prairies on the 12th, November 12th. And at the symposium is that, you know, turf grass, we obviously love our turf grass. I can't imagine having a dog or having kids play ball in a prairie that's, you know, 5-6 feet tall. But
what is a pocket prairie? What do you mean by that exactly?
You know, a pocket prairie is just a fancy way of saying a butterfly garden with more grasses. If you took a butterfly garden and started putting predominantly grasses in it, more than 50% grasses, then you start shifting it into a prairie. Well, I have here on our property here of 127 acres, we got about 35 plus acres that are prairie. Well, these prairies are big, bold, 6 feet tall acres of it. You know, if you just reduce that down, take the same concept of sustainable entity and reduce that down, provides habitat. We have ground birds that love hiding underneath the bunch grasses, and of course the birds feeding off the seed heads. Then of course we have the flowering plants in there. We'll have coneflower. We have our asters that are blooming right now in those prairies. So all a pocket prairie is taking a small backyard, taking that prairie concept and reducing it down to just a few feet, and still works. Pocket prairies are very low maintenance. I think that's the big thing is to understand there's very little maintenance to a prairie when you put it in your backyard.
And you'll be talking about this at the Native Plant Symposium.
Yeah,
that's correct.
I'm beginning to think I better give Mike more than 50 minutes. I'm readjusting the schedule right now.
Lots to talk about. Yeah.
Scott, you know me.
Scott, how diverse is Ohio when it comes to native plants?
We're very fortunate to live in a very diverse state of area of plants. I mean, we're in one of the great temperate hardwood forests on the planet. There's only maybe 5 to 7 of those in the world, and we're in the middle of one of them. So a great diversity of trees that is quite unique to our area. Same with Mike in Tennessee. And then we do have areas of we would mostly be forest, but there are areas that would be prairie, that would be wetlands, and some other different types of ecosystems that would provide a lot of different herbaceous and plants, grasses, and so forth. So extremely diverse.
Well, give me some examples of native plants for our area.
Oh, man.
it's a big list.
Yeah, that's a tall order. Most people don't realize, but many of the trees in our yards are in fact native trees.
Okay.
So you start there and you say, okay, the oaks, 90% of the oaks are native. I'd say 75% of the maples you see out in neighborhoods are native. And you go on down the list. So your hickories and all of that. And then you start getting into herbaceous plants, and you're starting to see a lot more of the native plants getting into landscapes. Like coneflowers have really caught on. Some of the coral bells are at least in part native or, in fact, native plants now. Mike could probably help me with some others, but a lot of the grasses are really, really good.
Yeah, Mike, you want to build on that?
Yeah, sedges. I think sedges is, yeah. I mean, Scott, you may agree with this, but, you know, I remember a time just not even 10 years ago that we were not talking about sedges. There was monkey grass instead, the non-native monkey grass, or dwarf mondo, the Eurasian species. And now we're talking about sedges. And I actually had a gentleman from Austin Peay State University, a professor that was big in sedges, on my podcast last night. And he was talking about, you know, 300-plus species of the carex sedges in the United States. And so these are those dry shade, many cases, dry shade ground covers, which is in gardening is probably the hardest scenario to meet. You know, you can't even plant a hosta in dry shade because it's too dry for the hosta. And so a lot of these species work in that dry shade.
Yeah, and just for our listeners, sedges are grass-like plants similar to usually low-growing kind of grasses. It's kind of interesting, Mike, that 20 years ago, we were saying the same things about grasses. There weren't that many in landscapes, and now we're introduced to a whole new group of sedges, And Shannon Curry, one of our speakers, is giving a talk on grasses and sedges at the symposium on November 12th
as well. I'm glad she's on board,
She's outstanding.
Yeah.
Mike, how many native plants does Grow Wild offer?
Oh, wow. We've got about 1,000 different species of several different genera, and we got about 1,000 species that we offer, and we're still obtaining more. And, you know, one of the things I like about Cincinnati in that area is the diversity, and it mimics a lot of the diversity that we have here in Middle Tennessee. So we're all the time finding new species, and I joke about it is that I would grow poison ivy if I could get my employees to handle it. But, you know, they keep looking at me every time I threaten to do that. But,
there's so many.
I don't know what it is. But there's so many species still left to be found. And I think that's crazy to think about that, you know, we walk around in these woods, we go out in the prairies, we're still finding species that are great under cultivation in our own backyards. And I'm not taking anything away from some of the Eurasian species. I mean, down here in the South, crepe myrtles are big. You know, that's a great thing. But we have obviously crossed a little bit of the threshold when we've taken an invasive non-native species and put it in our backyard. And, of course, there's a big concern about that, you know, the invasiveness of some of the non-natives. And so there, you know, people are looking for something that is more behaved and in their yard, and why not go in their, ironically, in their own backyard and look out in the woods in that area, whether it's in Ohio and in Middle Tennessee.
You think there's a growing interest, Mike, among people in native plants?
There are, and there's a lot. It seems like the millennials are the ones that's really more excited, and
your millennial generation,
exactly. You know, and what we're really looking at is, you know, the kids. Because they're going to make the biggest changes with us, you know, is that, okay, when I get a school group come out here to the nursery, you know, and I show them something that is just absolutely beautiful, they're going to go home and tell their parents, like, by the way, let me tell you what Grow Wild has got. And I don't see anything like that in our yard or in our neighborhood. Next thing you know, there's your marketing right there, is that to get the kids excited about it, they'll carry that with them. And again, I believe they're the ones that making the changes by using more of these native species.
So if I understand right, Mike, this started as a hobby for you. Did you ever foresee this turning into a business?
No, I did not. And Scott can tell you about the native plant industry is that, you know, we're still not mainstream. And, you know, you can go into the major big box stores, chain box stores, and you're seeing more native species offered, but you know it's still not quite there yet. And we joke about this in our business is that we're probably one of the fastest growing nonprofit organizations in America. Is that we're still, you know, it's still a struggle for us. I think a lot of us that's in the native plant industry and the commercial growing industry, we're very passionate about it. We believe in what we're doing. When we see the butterflies show up here, when we see the birds show up here in the nursery, and it's like, wow, I don't remember that, you know, back home in suburbia. And we think, okay, why not? You know, why don't we put those plants in suburbia? If I'm attracting all the birds and butterflies here in the nursery because of my plant inventory, why can't we put some of that in suburbia? And I think the passion is what keeps driving us. And I do see it snowballing. I mean, look at the fact that Cincinnati Zoo is having this symposium. I mean, that's a big deal. Look at the fact that there's a slot on your radio station right now talking about native plants. And it wasn't there, you know, a couple of decades ago. So it is growing. I'm excited about it. I'm excited to go to a symposium and talk to a crowd there, almost preaching to the choir, I guess, Scott.
Mostly so, yeah. But it's a good choir.
Yeah. Scott, what's the zoo have in the way of native plants? I mean, you've got
several gardens and a lot of natives throughout the entire zoo. But a few gardens in particular, if you're familiar with the Night Hunter's Garden, which mimics the puma habitat, that is all entirely native plants. And then around the Passenger Pigeon Memorial is an all-native garden of including some endangered species, telling the story of the loss of these plants along, you know, right there with the loss of the passenger pigeon, which died, the last one died in at the Cincinnati Zoo in 1915.
Are the plants identified as native plants in these gardens so people can...
We have some signage that does indicate that these are native gardens, but and there are signs indicating what the plants are, but we try to keep that to a minimum to, you know, lessen the effect of, you know, billboard city type thing, you know. And then we have a rain garden out by the education building that's entirely natives. So quite a few areas with a lot of native plants.
So tell us a little bit more about the symposium. We know some of the topics. What are some of the other things that people can
talk about? We have some really, really good speakers. In addition to Mike, we have Shana Berg coming down from Dawes Arboretum. She's going to talk about the collections that they're making in the South of some of our own species in anticipation of global warming and trialing these plants. So, you know, our sugar maples may not do so well in the warm, hot, dry climate that may come down the pike in 25, 30 years, you know. So they're bringing sugar maples up from Arkansas and trying them and seeing how they perform. So she's going to talk about that. We talked about Shannon Curry earlier. She is a great speaker with the biggest grass producer in the country. She'll be talking about grasses and sedges. Andrew Lane Gibson, a lot of people know him as one of our best naturalists in the state. He's going to talk about endangered plants and their habitats in Ohio. So that should be very interesting. And then Steve Castrani is a superstar in the world of native plant nurseries, and he's going to talk about a lot of the natives that they're introducing into their line of perennials.
And that's the symposium is Saturday, November 12th.
Right.
Okay, where are the hours?
Doors open at 9, first talk is at 10, we'll go till 5, and then we have a social hour.
Okay. Yeah. And we have a link to more information at WVXU.org. Mike and Scott, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Mike Berkeley is co-owner of Grow Wild Nursery in Fairview, Tennessee, and co-host of the Native Plant Podcast. We have a link to that podcast at WVXU.org. And Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and Taking Root chairman, Scott Berline. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier, with help from Kevin Reynolds. The assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Dave Shermer was the technical director. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. People around the world are watching with fascination and curiosity as U.S. voters get set to pick the next president and choose who will represent them in Congress. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we'll talk with a German parliamentarian visiting the United States to get a better understanding of U.S. politics. We'll also hear about the programs and services local colleges provide to students with learning difficulties. That's on Cincinnati Edition, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.